If you've ever felt like you didn't understand the younger generation, or the older generation for that matter, there's some help for you this hour. And if you have a newborn in your family, are you ready for the questions you're going to get about the good old days? I'm Rob Ferret, filling in for Kathleen Dunn. It's 7 minutes after nine on New Year's Day here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. My guests this hour write the annual Beloit College Mindset List, and they're the co-authors of The Mindset List of American History, From Typewriters to Text Messages, What 10 Generations of Americans Think is Normal. Ron Neef is former public affairs director at Beloit College. Welcome back to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Good morning.
And also joining us, Tom McBride, professor of English and Kiefer Professor of Humanities at Beloit College. Good morning.
Good morning and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to both of you, and it's good to have you back on the Ideas Network. Before we get into what's going on in the latest mindset list, let's start with Ron. What's the point of the mindset list? Where did the idea come from?
Well, it started about 1996, 97, 98. There were a lot of lists showing up on the relatively new internet. People like to put out lists and so on. And we were following them, and we also were recognizing that for a lot of those lists, they were very opinionated lists of things these kids don't know anymore. They're not half as smart as I was, kind of attitude. And we thought these were kind of grumpy. And we started making a list of the things that had never been part of the students' lives, the students starting college that year, never been part of their lives, or had always been part of their lives. They just thought they were normal.
And then, Tom, how have you used this list over the years? As a professor yourself and seeing other professors use it, how does it work when the new students arrive in the fall?
Well, about 1999, I went on the Today Show and said that one of the functions of the list was to prevent professors and teachers from getting hardening of the references. The old Watergate references that professors and teachers could once count on and know that every student, you know, fully understood the implications and the details. Those references are, you know, simply too stale. They're too far away, too long ago, for professors to be able to count on them anymore as teaching tools. So it's not as though you can't use the Watergate references anymore. You just have to explain them. So this was a gentle reminder, I think, of for educators that the students are, believe it or not, getting younger every year. You have to accept that, even though it's not pleasant. And for the students, of course, it was a way of saying, you know, look, this is what seems to be normal in your worldview. But the reason you're going to college is to get out of the cave of that worldview and to acquire a much wider perspective. So it was in many ways a sort of call for negotiations, if you will, between teachers and students.
And I'd add to that as we started to recognize the speed up in the amount of information available, that what we talked about as Watergate situation suddenly became things like the Beatles, and suddenly we're having to explain Bill Clinton and so on. So it's every year there's another layer in there that needs explanation.
So it's light and fun, but there's a serious message here about communicating between people who really grew up in different worlds in a way.
That's right. And in fact, one of the things that we've most gotten a kick out of is how the mindset list allows us to talk about other things, to, you know, talk about history. You mentioned our book, The Mindset List of American History, which is a study of 10 generations of American 18-year-olds. We can talk about what's changed, about what has not changed, what is human nature, what is constant. We've been able to talk about technology, particularly the future of technology and how technology changes us or doesn't change us. And so, yes, there's a serious core in the comedy, right?
Well, and I've actually put some of this into practice. You guys inspired me as a parent. I'll say, you know, when I was a kid, we didn't have these personal computers, and before long they won't have them either, because they'll have other devices. But then I'll go back. 50 years ago, people, you know, didn't have, well, 40 years ago, people didn't have CD players. 100 plus years ago, cars were really rare. through most of human history. No electricity, no cars. Just trying to get them to appreciate what we have now, what we didn't have then, and how it's going to change in the future.
Well, I think they, you know, I mean, we see this all the time, and it comes down to the question, how did you communicate? Mm-hmm. You know, the idea that you wrote a note out and slid it under somebody's door seems so prehistoric.
Well, let's get a couple of examples of what's in the newest mindset list for the incoming college students last fall, and then we'll do a little science fiction work with one of your newer lists for 2013. What kind of things does the incoming class, the college freshmen this year, what references did you want to point out?
Well, one of them is that they watch TV on everything but TV sets. I have a daughter who's 24. Whenever she comes home, mom and dad say, Emma, wouldn't you like to sit downstairs and enjoy Bastrophe's Theater with us on our huge new flat TV screen? No, I think I'll just go upstairs and watch a movie on my iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
So that's certainly, I think one huge technological change. And let me just add to that the extent to which, they do live, and this is reflected on the list, how much they do live on these small devices. There was a time when students in high school, for example, or for that matter, junior high, could actually, go between classes, which is, 5 minutes, without texting someone in another part of the building. This is no longer possible. You've got to text as soon as the bell rings, and you're probably even texting during the class. So, it's very, very clear that these students are really, tethered to this small device that really opens up the entire planet to them.
And Ron,
that comes about every year is that for the parents of these kids, they're still fascinated with things like the miracle that you can sit down in front of what looks like a television screen and a typewriter and send an instant message to somebody around the world, where for these students who were born into cyberspace, they have therefore just measured their lives by it. It's a normal development. This generation has also come to political consciousness at a time of increasing doubts about America's future. They're bombarded by questions about jobs and the value of a college degree and so on. So it's a very different life from when their parents needed a plane ticket to get on a plane, and they've never seen a plane ticket.
Rob Ferret filling in for Kathleen Dunn on this New Year's Day, talking to Ron Neef and Tom McBride. They're the authors of the annual Mindset List. They're helping bridge the generation gap, first between students and professors, but it's useful for the rest of us, too. What is it about this place and time that we don't understand about our previous generation or the next generation? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Is there something that baffles you about the world the older generation grew up in, or the world the younger generation is growing up in? Have you had a communication breakdown where you refer to someone that everybody knows, but somebody older or younger doesn't get it? Tell us your story at 800-642-1234. Now, Tom and Ron, you've got a new thing out, something that you've, I think, just started in the last couple of years, a little bit of a science fiction exercise, saying, hey, parents of newborns this year, here are maybe the questions you're going to get when your kid goes into college or whatever there is to go into in 18 years. Ron, why did you guys start doing that?
Well, it seemed like the natural development. One list is looking at 18-year-olds today. Well, what was happening 18 years ago when they were first born? Did the parents ever imagine that and said to them, after they promised them a pony or something, in 18 years we are going to have an African American president of this country? It's things that, in the technologies and so on, things that have developed that nobody could have foreseen. Well, we do our best to foresee them.
And Tom, what are a couple of the questions you had on your list that the kids born today might be asking their parents in 18
years?
Well,
we have 25 of them, and by the way, you can find this at themindsetlist.com. And a couple of my favorites are, how long have folks been placing video phone calls on the refrigerator door? Because, you know, one of the trends that is now being predicted is that really the advent of information is going to be everywhere. You're going to be able to put on Google glasses and go on tours of forests and tours of historic sites, and you're going to be able to find in the internet ether all sorts of additional information if you just put on those Google glasses. That's the technological one that's my biggest favorite. The one that is my biggest favorite in terms of social life is, do you remember when the national anthem was only sung in English at sports events, as opposed to what many people think is going to happen in certain parts of the country, and that is half of it is going to be sung in English and the other half in Spanish?
We'll feel a little like Canada then, maybe, except Spanish replacing French there. Ron,
right.
Do you have any favorites from the new list?
Well, yeah, I mean, one of my favorites is the is there a reason why all those shopping centers and concert halls look like they were once great big churches?
Okay. So what's the future history there?
Within a block of my house, there are two churches for sale, and there are two more that are speculated will be going up for sale in a couple of years. They can't maintain these large churches anymore. What are they going to turn into? I've speculated they could be a new supermarket called Holy Foods. you know, when did you the idea that we are creating computers now that are sensitive, that have feelings, that you can put your thoughts into to operate everything from prosthetic limbs and so on. So that question of did you actually throw away computerized robots without their permission? Could become a real issue if they're reading your thoughts and your thoughts are, I'm going to dump this tomorrow, you may have a revolution on your hands.
One of my favorites from the list is, how did you survive as a kid without your own 3D copier? I've seen 3D printers in action just down the street at the Institutes for Discovery and over at Sector 67 in Madison, but they're novelties. You know, there's a few pioneers of these things out there. Something that every kid will have, like for a while, desktop PCs were taking over the tables and countertops in the country?
Well, about 25 years ago, I remember being in a meeting and urging the deans to get fax machines in their offices and having one of them look at me saying, I have better things to do with my budget than buy toys.
Well, they were right. Now who wants a fax machine on their desk?
Yeah.
Well, the other example that I would give in terms of how very rapidly things change, and by the way, Ron had mentioned earlier that people always say to us, are you guys in a conspiracy to make us feel old, useless, and irrelevant? And we always respond, you know, with McBride and Neef's special theory of relativity, you're not getting older faster. It's just that things are speeding up in terms of change. So, you know, it's not as though, you know, you're in a train that's moving into oblivion. You're actually moving very slowly. It's just that the surrounding landscape is hurtling down the road. And a very good example of that phenomenon was only about 10 years ago when Beloit College was very much like other institutions, a phone in every room, a private phone in every room. My goodness, what could be better than that? Within 2 years, the whole idea was totally obsolete as cell phones and smartphones, sort of came to the hot hand of every college student. And now the idea that there's a private ground line in every room is just laughable. Mm-hmm. And that was only about a decade ago.
Well, one thing I like about the list is you're not judging. As Ron, you mentioned earlier, this isn't these stupid kids don't know things that everybody should know, and it's not you geezers don't know what the kids know and don't know. It's it's non-judgmental. Is that an important part of this, Tom?
It is. we really feel that our job is entirely repertorial. It's entirely descriptive. Now, we certainly are prepared to report, value judgments. For example, one of the items in the mindset list for the mindset list advisory for new parents, which we were just talking about, is how did you remember to charge your phone before the heat from your shirt charged it for you automatically? And there are many, obviously, who are going to really rue that sort of technology because they'll say, don't these kids have to remember anything? They don't have to memorize anything because they can look everything up on the internet and so forth. You know, whether or not, these are good or bad trends is not for us to say, but we're certainly prepared to report, different perspectives on that question.
It's Ron Neef and Tom McBride with Beloit College. We're talking about their mindset list. They do a new one each year for incoming college students and for their professors and for the rest of us. And they've written a book on mindset lists as well. It's all about helping us know what references people of younger and older generations might have in common and might not have in common. We have full phone lines. We'll get to your calls in just a couple of minutes. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org. If you've got an example of something that leads to communication breakdowns, you referred to that great thing that Carson did some years ago, and somebody said, Carson? Carson Daly? Maybe you don't know what each other are talking about. Send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Rob Ferret, filling in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Rob Ferret, filling in for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Happy New Year to you. Here's a fun one coming up after two on Talk of the Nation. On the face of it, traditional societies have little in common with us today. No cars, no smartphones, no books. But Jared Diamond argues there's actually a lot we can learn from them about universal human problems like elder care, fitness, and conflict resolution. Jared Diamond talks about The World Until Yesterday, his new book. Well, that's kind of related to what we're talking about here on a little shorter time scale, the mindset list. Beloit College comes out with it each year. They also have a new list for new parents, the kinds of things that their kids might be asking them in 18 years about the good old days, how things change and how we don't always share common references with younger and older generations. Ron Neef and Tom McBride, they compile the mindset list and they're our guests today. And we'll get to your calls now with Jim in Brookfield. Hi, Jim.
Hey, good morning. As a part of what I do for a living, I often give tours, and these tours include some very sophisticated, albeit old, machines. And one of these machines is the machine that opens up envelopes that contains customer bills and their checks. And it opens up the envelope, and it splits it open on three sides, and it zips out the payment, and it separates, and it orients all of the particular parts, and then it sorts it. And it's just a marvel to watch, even though it's very old technology. And as part of that tour, I look at my tour group, typically prospective clients, and I tell them proof positive that Rube Goldberg is alive and well and living in Wisconsin. And, and if they're over 40, they laugh. And if they're under 40, they roll their what's going on.
Great. Thank you so much. That's a perfect example, isn't it, Ron?
Yeah, absolutely. The idea of one of the I think the title of our last chapter in the book is they never needed a key for anything. And the fact that keys disappearing, we have a great anecdote of a man who found a young woman in tears at her car in the parking lot because the battery in her key fob had gone dead and she couldn't open her car door, and she was stuck there and didn't know what to do. He took the key, put it in the slot on the door, and opened the door. She had no clue what that device was for.
Interesting. Well, and in his story there too, there are a few references that might stymie people before too long. What's a check? What's an envelope?
Yeah, right, exactly. And the reference to Rube Goldberg.
Well, that was the key there, yeah.
And I think that was really, in many ways, the key. And we, of course, get this all the time from, our many thousands of followers. A woman wrote us the other day and said she made a reference to a bunch of eighth graders about her John Hancock. And she said, I swear they thought I was being somewhat prurient.
Well, that may be another issue about historical education there.
That's right. And we actually have a name for these. They're called mindset moments. Mm-hmm. You know, if you go to prx.org, we have a several radio commentaries about these. Things that you mention to 18-year-olds or younger or even, you know, 30-year-olds today that references of which they have no knowledge, you know, whatsoever. And I must say that that even includes Watergate. We do have, I think today, 18-year-olds who have a vague idea of what Watergate was, but it's only a vague idea at best. In fact, one student said, Watergate, isn't that where Monica Lewinsky lived? yes, indeed, these references are not to be taken for granted.
Thanks, Rob. I'd go back to your question of a moment ago about envelopes and so on. I'm still fascinated with the fact that on my iPhone, the symbols on it for save is an outmoded floppy disk.
A floppy disk, yes.
So for mail is an envelope, and for phone is a handset of a receiver that they have never seen.
And for record, there's a radio microphone like I'm talking into that a lot of people will never encounter in their daily lives.
I've
seen a lot of gripes about that, and even some people campaigning to change those dead references on our computers.
Right, exactly. I mean, they really literally, you know, some years ago, you know, I think it was really at the very beginning of this project, you know, one of our most popular items was they've never dialed a telephone. Mm-hmm. Now they've never hung up a telephone.
Right, you just press a button and you're
done.
That's
right.
Thanks for the call. There's an open line for you now at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. If you got a busy signal earlier, you can get in there now. We'll go next to Linda in Madison. Hi, Linda.
Hi. My, I forgot the term.
Mindset moment?
Mindset moment. Thank you, Mr. Rob. Was a couple of years ago having to separate some middle school-aged Catholic parochial kids into girls on one side and guys on the other because on the other bus, not mine, there had been some hanky-panky going on.
Uh-oh.
And they looked at me like, what's hanky-panky? What's that mean? And I had to try to explain that it meant adult mischievous behavior and leave it at that.
All right. Hanky, maybe they thought it was something like the hokey pokey, which is dangerous on a bus, too.
Well, I can remember PDA, public displays of affection. No PDA allowed.
And for a little while, people thought that meant they had to turn off their personal digital assistant.
That's probably true.
And then now it means nothing? I don't know.
I really wonder if PDA isn't dead.
It could
I mean, the phrase, hardly the practice.
Exactly. No, there's still plenty of those going on.
Right.
Back to the phones now. Thanks for the call, Linda. We'll talk to Eugene in Viola. Hi, Eugene.
Good morning. I am a sutler at different events during the season, during the summer, and I demonstrate Palmer penmanship. Uh-huh. And do I get looks of amazement? What's Palmer penmanship?
Uh-huh.
Until you have them sit down and try it and try the different strokes, pretty much. You can get the adults as well as the teenager interested in it, pretty much. And I also come from the time when when I was growing up, we used a 32-volt light plant for electricity. And that's just an amazement in itself.
Well, and now, Eugene, you're demonstrating this penmanship. Are you getting people now who have never done any form of cursive script?
Not much.
Not yet.
But Palmer isn't complicated, but you got to learn the different strokes.
All right. Thanks, Eugene, for the call. Well, I wonder, I mean, there's controversies in schools now. Do we still teach script? Do we still teach cursive? Is that something that's going to be on a mindset list before long?
It was on the mindset list last year.
I didn't look closely enough.
They no longer can write in or read cursive. And it prompted phone calls, when we released the list, it goes all over the world, and we had calls from Cape Town, South Africa to New Zealand, sort of reassured that it wasn't just the kids in their area that couldn't write in script, but who needs it anymore? Nobody's being judged by their penmanship.
One of the things that we've also noted is that if there are fans of Mad Men out there, when Betts and Don go to visit their kids' school, their grammar school in about, 1960, 61, all around the blackboard are the blown up examples of how to form the letters, mm-hmm. both capital letters as well as small letters. And, of course, that was 50 years ago. It's a world that is gone.
Rob Ferret filling in for Kathleen Dunn, talking to Tom McBride and Ron Neef. They compose the annual Mindset List for Beloit College. They're the authors of the Mindset List of American History. We're talking about mindset moments, things that make perfect sense to people of one generation and not a lick of sense to somebody from a younger or older generation. If you have had a mindset moment, you made a reference, you assumed everybody knew about it, and somebody didn't because they were older or younger, give a call, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Before we go back to the phones, you just mentioned Mad Men, and I haven't watched a lot of the show, but it seems like it's almost a walking mindset moment. Like, ah, look, pregnant woman smoking and drinking. Guys having oysters and martinis for their two-hour martini lunch. Just all these things that aren't familiar to us now that they really hammer home on that show. Is that a favorite of you guys?
It is. It's certainly a favorite of mine. And I think you're right. It is just one, big extended mindset moment. And, of course, the attitudes towards women mm-hmm. on the show, I think, are the ones that have gotten, the most play. And I've found that among my friends, there's a generational cutoff with respect to Mad Men. For those of us who are older, we find the show to be, really quite comic because, we're sort of more real children of the 60s. For those who are older, the attitudes towards women are a real turnoff, and they really can't quite watch the show. These are friends of ours who, grew up during, the sort of classical period of rising feminism. So there's not only an exploration of the generation gap in the show, I think there's, in my limited experience, a generation gap in terms of attitudes towards the show.
Well, I was, Rob, I was on Madison Avenue during that period.
No kidding.
And every time I watch them go through those lunches, I really have to wonder how I ever survived it.
I wonder that, too. These people really drank, if that's an accurate representation.
Well, the theory was that everybody did it, so nobody expected anything after 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So.
All right. Well, I probably won't give that a try here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Tempting though it may be sometimes.
I think most people today are getting over that sort of experience.
Well, maybe. We'll go back to the phones now with Tom in Green Bay. Hi, Tom.
Hey, good morning. Recently, everybody my age, I'm retired, everybody my age has lived in Green Bay. We know what Lombardi time is. Lombardi time is, if you're not 15 minutes early, you're late. They put a new clock on Lambeau Field this past year, and they set it to Lombardi time. And they were getting call after call after call, and finally had to explain it in the newspaper that it was set to Lombardi times because nobody would understand it.
That's great. Thanks a lot, Tom. Well, that's an area-specific or a fan-base-specific mindset moment, but a pretty good example, right, guys?
Well, I wonder, in terms of even a national audience, if you asked people who said winning isn't everything, it's the only thing. I think that probably people over 50 would know that it was Vince Lombardi, or they would say, oh, yeah, it was that great coach out in Green Bay. I suspect people under 50 or under 45 would have no idea.
All right, back to the phones. Thanks for the call, Tom. We'll go now to Amy in Appleton. Hi, Amy.
Hi. We were having a conversation at Christmas dinner about telephones and kind of had a laugh over the fact that the people over 60 at the table knew what party lines were.
So I know what they are,
and
but
kids,
I never experienced
kids
it.
I was a teenager, and I'm only 60 now, and that's whatever ring came through. It was either your house, the people across the street, the people up the hill or down the street, and you had to wait for your ring. Otherwise, it wasn't for you.
And Amy? Be honest,
yes.
Did you ever pick up and listen for gossip purposes to your neighbor?
Of course.
Of course. Thank you so much for the call, Amy. Yeah, you had to be careful what you said on the phone back in those days, and not because of the government, because of the neighbors. Party lines, I bet those showed up on a mindset list at some point, or at least in the book.
They do show up in the book, yes. And I'm old enough to remember them mostly among my rural friends, my friends of mine in high school, grammar school, who lived in rural areas. And yes, you know, if one ring was yours and three rings was the Joneses. And I do believe that, indeed, listening to gossip surreptitiously was very common. And I might add also that I had great aunts who worked in the telephone company in the 30s, you know, back in the days when every call had to go through the operator.
Uh-huh.
And listening surreptitiously, my Uh-oh. Great aunts admitted to me after they retired, was really quite rampant in Central Texas
wow.
during the 1930s and 40s. So the idea, you know, that we are exposed to some unique threat to our privacy today really isn't borne out, I think, by history.
Well, and things do come in full circle, because now when I ride the bus in and home in the morning and afternoon, I get to listen in on at least one side of other people's conversations as they talk on their cell phones.
That's right. We all thought telegrams were dead, but now they've reappeared as text messages.
Yeah, that too. All right. Thanks a lot for the call. One more before we take a break. We'll go to Randy in Madison. Hi, Randy.
Hi. Actually, winning isn't everything, it's the only thing, was said by John Wayne, his football coach in The Long Ride Home. So now even our misinformation is getting lost.
I've heard it was misattributed to Lombardi, is that right?
Is it correct, yes.
Okay.
And last week I was at the library and I ran into a college-age friend, and I was checking out the book Moonraker, and he asked me what I had, and I showed it to him, and he said, "Oh, there's James Bond books."
All right, yes. Ian Fleming there, yes.
Right, I just wanted to, I think there's a certain judgmentalism here, which is to say that, and it goes both ways, but the way I think is that, you know, a lot of the brightest people we have ever had, the people who have really made progress, came out of one-room schoolhouses. They came out of just these, you know, places that by any modern standard had nothing. But they had an education. It was really a first-rate education, and they were smart. And sometimes I think that's what people need to remember, that our machines didn't do everything for us.
Gotcha. Thanks a lot for the call, Randy. He had a couple interesting points there. First of all, that might be one for a mindset list of some years back. James Bond books were books before they were movies.
Yeah. In fact, Ian Fleming was one of John F. Kennedy's favorite authors. Mm-hmm. And it is true that I think if you ask most people today, they will think of James Bond in terms of Pierce Brosnan and in terms of movies. I suspect that the younger they are, the less they will have heard of Sean Connery. And as far as the other point is concerned, if you go down to Knox College at Galesburg, Illinois, they have in the archival section of their library all of the books that Abraham Lincoln was said to have read, and the books only fill one shelf. Lincoln was not able to read a lot of books, but the books he read were seminal, and he had studied them very carefully. Now, whether or not that would be enough in this day and age, I think is somewhat problematical, but it certainly does speak to the point of our caller, that indeed, you know, understanding some basic principles and being able to apply them well can still, in fact, mark you as a very, very, very smart person.
Talking to Tom McBride and Ron Neef, they create and write the annual Beloit College Mindset List, and they're the co-authors of the Mindset List of American History, helping bridge the generation gap by saying which references different generations might get or not get. We've got a couple open lines now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Have you had a mindset moment where there was a communication gap? You referred to a pop culture thing, a technological thing, and somebody younger than you or older than you didn't get it. 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Rob Ferret, filling in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Rob Ferret, filling in for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Got another fun one coming up after 10. A look at maps throughout history, why we make them, how they change the way we see our world, and how maps are changing in an era of new technology like GPS, Google Street View. Do we still need the paper maps? Do we still want them? That's coming up after 10. This hour, I'm talking to Ron Neef and Tom McBride. They're with Beloit College, and they are the creators of the Beloit College Mindset List. And they are the co-authors of the Mindset List of American History, From Typewriters to Text Messages, What 10 Generations of Americans Think is Normal. We're taking your calls, your mindset moments, where you made a reference that somebody didn't get because they were younger or older and just grew up in a different time where that didn't make any sense to them at all. Back to the phones now. We'll talk to Linda in Ripon. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. We have mindset moments all the time because one of our businesses is livery, which is horse-drawn vehicles. And one of the things we do when we go to an event is we allow the participants to watch us harness the horses, and we go over all of the tack and how it's done, which really hasn't changed for hundreds of years. So we have those moments all the time and really enjoy sharing them.
Thanks a lot for the call, Linda. Well, that would show up pretty early in the Mindset List book, I would think, because not a lot of us grew up with horses and livery, Tom.
That's correct. One of the items in our book, The Mindset List of American History, from one of the early mindset lists, this was for the high school class of 1913, is that indeed more and more horses are able to retire early because of the advent of the horseless carriage, which is, of course, one of those sort of obscure implications of a new technology, is that whenever there is a new technology, then somebody who was part of the old technology is put out to pasture. In the case of horses, of course, I think one hopes that this was a happy kind of putting out to pasture. But think, for example, with about typewriters. When typewriters came into play, all of those people who had used, to go back to our previous caller, the Palmer penmanship method, the scriveners, were all, put out of business. There was simply no need for them anymore. So with every new technology, there are winners and losers. Fortunately, if you're in the livery business and it's going well, then you manage to escape that particular dynamic. But most people, of course, don't.
Thanks for the call. We'll go now to Janet in Amory. Hi, Janet.
Hi. I have an incident with my, at the time, six-year-old grandson. I have a car that doesn't have anything automatic on it. And I picked him up from school. It was hot. Oh, Grandma, turn the air conditioning on. I don't have it. You have to open the window. Well, how do I do that? Well, there's that crank back there. So he opened the window. We got home to his house, out of the car. Shut the doors and everything. It's Ryan. It's starting to rain. We've got to shut the windows. Well, so we opened the door and shut the windows. Grandma, you know, you have the neatest car. You don't have to have the engine running to shut the windows.
That's a pretty good mindset moment. Thanks, Janet. Ron, thoughts on that one?
Well, we get into some arguments over the points that we make. We did include a couple of years ago that they've never cranked up a window. Mm-hmm. Similar to our announcement that they've never seen an 8-track player in a car, we suddenly heard from everybody in the world that did still have a crank and whose mother still had an 8-track player in her old Cadillac. So
both of them.
They survive somewhere.
Right, but for the vast majority of people you meet of that age, they will never have cranked that window and never seen an 8-track player, I think, or maybe at a garage sale, but that's about it.
There will always be exceptions. There are people who tell us they still collect. You know, it's become a rather economical way to listen to music because the 8-track players, 8-track tapes cost about 10 cents. You know?
That's why music technology is one of those fastest changing things. For years we had vinyl, then cassettes, brief stint of 8-track, CDs. My kids know what a CD is because we're old-fashioned in my household, but they now listen to a lot of MP3s.
And laptops are now being produced without any DVD slot.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. So those that might be another thing of the past. All those CDs will be garden reflectors.
Well, you know,
one of our questions that we'll be asked in 18 years, what was hard about hardware and what was soft about software?
Well, you know, my students asked me if people jogged when I was growing up. And I say, well, we didn't have to because we actually had to get up to change the TV dial. We got our exercise that way.
Oh, yeah. I had fun explaining the concept of rabbit ears to my kids.
That's a good one.
Where I used to be a genius of hanging hangers and tinfoil to get reception on my little black and white TV that I had as a college student.
Tinfoil worked every time.
Yep.
and the next big technological step was with your father sitting in the living room shouting to you on the roof. Turn it a little more to the left.
Growing up, we had a fancy technology. We had a dial that actually turned the antenna on our roof very slowly, but that was a big step.
We call that the rotator.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. All right, I'm done demonstrating my age. Back to the phones now with Tina in Oshkosh. Hi, Tina.
Hi. I was just wondering why we still are, people in the entertainment business are still using the word album.
Ooh.
When I know that my son would never be able to label it if he saw one in front of him.
A great question.
Oh, probably the same films. You know, I noticed that most people who have to hold up something, you know, because of a musical act coming on, they do it very uncomfortably. They don't know what to call this thing, this case.
This new release.
Yeah. And the fact that those are disappearing and that we're just downloading now. I mean, to me, it's made Christmas very difficult. You can't buy books or CDs anymore, and you know, it's hard to tell somebody I've sent you something for Christmas. Look on your phone.
Right, right. Yeah, there's no actual physical entity there.
Yeah.
I've just sent you some digital information. Enjoy.
Yeah.
And how do you wrap that?
Yeah.
Back to the phones now. Thanks for the call, Tina. We'll go to Bob in Chippewa Falls now. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. I've got a comment. I'm a trainer. I've got two comments, actually. I'm a trainer, a safety trainer, and I'm training a class, and I said something to the class about if you do this, you're likely to dial 911. And I made the motion of dialing a rotary phone. And they all broke out laughing.
What is that weird gesture that safety trainer's doing?
What is he doing?
And what was your other comment, Bob?
The other comment was I lived with my grandfather. I was born in 1950. I lived with my grandfather. He was 62 when my father was born. So he was born in 1861. He was a high-pressure steam pipe fitter and a blacksmith, mm-hmm. and a stationary engineer. When he watched Alan Shepard go into space, he turned to me and said, "At one point in time, I could fix or make every machine known to man."
And not anymore.
Right.
Wow, thanks. A couple of interesting points there, Bob. Good mindset moments. First of all, you're not going to get far showing kids the dialing motion these days.
No, they'll probably think you're doing something vaguely obscene.
But his other comment really speaks to a substantial change. The concept of a mechanic of the 19th century going into the 20th century saying, yep, any machine you throw at me, I can fix it. I can file gears. I can make a mold. And that is just a radically different mindset from where, you know, most of us wouldn't know where to start trying to fix the computer chip in our car.
That's right. Although I believe that we are now in a generation where you know, your average 18-year-old is, you know, far more likely to be able to tell you, you know, what's wrong with your computer, although not the software, but certainly might, you know, be able to reprogram it or something like that, than be able to tell you what's wrong with your automobile. You know, I think that the days when, you know, to be 18 and male was to be an automobile tinkerer are largely over. This is much more of a computerized information age. It's a software age, not a hardware age.
It also extends out in my world. I was a musician for years, and you got a gig, and three of you got in a car and drove over, and you played. Today, one needs a van, you know, two engineers, a producer, and so on, and 4 hours to set up for a gig.
I'm in a band, and I'm still doing it your way, Ron. So maybe that's where we're going wrong. Time for at least one more call. Dave is with us in Wisconsin Rapids now. Hi, Dave.
Good morning. Actually, I have a couple of them. The first one, our grandson. This is several years ago, and my wife was winding an antique clock, and my grandson said, "What are you doing?" And she said, "I'm winding the clock." And he said, "Why?" He had never seen a clock that wasn't electric. Some years before that, he asked his mom one day, "Mom, when you were a little girl, was there color?" And she said, "Well, what do you mean, Reed? Color television?" He said, "No, Mom, was there color?" And he had looked at some old photo albums at our house that were all black and white. And he made the jump to conclusion that there was a time when the world was black and white.
Very logical leap. Thanks, Dave. A couple good mindset moments.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Well, you know, some years ago, I guess it was only a year or two back now, Ron and I did a presentation for the Rock County, Wisconsin Historical Society. And, you know, one of the points that we made was that when the city of Janesville was first founded, there were very few mirrors, and there were, of course, no cameras. So people really did not have much technology by which to keep up with what they look like. And this must have affected their worldview as well. You simply don't know exactly what you look like. And, of course, an analogous situation was reported by our caller from Ripon. Was there color back then? If there was color back then, why weren't there cameras to capture it?
Well, there's some validity to it. I recall in the early 80s taking a train from Vienna to Budapest, and when we crossed that border into Hungary, it suddenly turned black and white. You know, it was, you know, from the luxury of Vienna to the starkness of Eastern Europe. I always remember Hungary in those years as black and white.
And, you know, the old plastic Bakelite was not a plastic. It was very heavy plastic, and they couldn't make it come in colors. It was in the area of the world that Ron just described, Eastern Europe, that Bakelite hung on for the longest, because these people were, in effect, much more monochromatic. You know, they weren't used to a lot of colors. So for them, you know, just sort of black, heavy Bakelite plastic was perfectly adequate.
Well, in our last minute or so, do you think your message is getting through? Do you think you're convincing professors and other people of the older generation that they need to do a little translating for, say, an incoming college student or their kids?
They tell us that we're getting through. You know, they tell us that they are much more careful now than when they do lesson plans or when they prepare lectures, that they are much more alert to, you know, look, I'm going to try to teach them something in light of something that I think they already know. Suppose they don't already know it.
Well, I think that if we're doing anything at all, we hear more and more today about multiple generations living under the same roof, and one of our hopes is that we've brought people perhaps back to the dinner table or the breakfast table and prompted some conversations, because I'll just cite the last item in our parents' advisory for this list. When you have to retire at 80, what are you and Mom going to do for the next 50 years? You know, it's
you know, we need to have greater understanding to survive that.
Well, I guess if we could make a plea to all of our listeners out there, if you haven't talked to the older person in your family and gotten them on tape about the old days, do it before it's too late. Because I know now I have all sorts of questions I wish I could have asked my parents, my grandparents. Now it's too late.
That's a great place to leave it. Thanks to Tom McBride and Ron Neef of Beloit College, sharing info and ideas from their Beloit College Mindset List. Thanks to you for your calls. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Brett Jaspers for producing this program. I'm Rob Ferret, filling in for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Net.